Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. The pain of loss can be overwhelming, and many people need help dealing with traumatic, life-changing events. So we're going to kind of continue our discussion in a way with our guest, a counselor who will tell us about how to find help and how to begin the healing process. Our guest is Kate Greenway. She is a licensed professional counselor, deep life coach. Kate is a certified clinical hypnotherapist, a grief support specialist, a stress resiliency coach, and a sexuality health educator. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're having problems dealing with loss. Maybe you're trying to help a loved one through grief. Join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Kate Greenway, thanks for joining in today. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Larry. I'm very happy to be here.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read or at least take a look at Breathing Lake Superior, but certainly a story about grief. And just to begin with, is there a clinical definition of grief?
Well, I was thinking about that. I think first of all, I wanted to say, yes, I read the whole book last weekend. And and I just listened to the interview with Ron. So I'm right there with you. And I wanted to really make that clear. What's, I think, important to start out with is to understand that in general, grief can usually does feel very, very, very intense for people. And I wanted to read a definition of grief that is not a clinical definition, but is the definition that I have in the front of my notebook, my syllabus, for when I teach my class to therapists at UWM. And then I will speak to the clinical definition of what's now called persistent complex bereavement disorder, and which is in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Diagnoses for a Therapist. And that was actually very controversial. Should grief even be in this giant book of disorders? And that's something that I talk about a lot with the therapists in my class who are taking the class for continuing education. So the way I like to start with them and in response to your question is this page that I have in the front of my notebook. Grief is a normal and natural reaction stemming from a loss of any kind. Grief can encompass physical sensations, a wide range of thoughts, provocative spiritual questions, and many, many complex feelings, such as intense sadness, numbness, anger, relief, guilt, despair, hostility, and anxiety. There is no timetable or recipe, no right way to grieve. Each experience of grief is unique.
That pretty much covers it. And it can last a long time.
It lasts a long time. And in the last hour, Larry said to you, made a comment, very personal comment to you, it never leaves you.
Right.
And I've experienced that in my own life, and all of the people that I've worked with and all the people I know who have experienced grief carry it with them forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's very important to honor that experience and how to couple that with the natural human resilience factors and be able to honor and carry our grief and still live and move forward in our own way, in our own time.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think sometimes people who are not grieving and in dealing with people who are grieving after a time, there's, you know, hey, isn't this time to get over it? And but there are maybe right, well, I don't know if there's a right way to grieve or a wrong way to grieve. I guess there can be wrong ways to grieve. We saw that in Breathing Lake Superior, the book.
Well, in that book in particular, I think Cal crossed over into a whole nother realm, which I wouldn't call that the realm of grief. I would call that the realm of delusion. And I would say he was in the persistent complex bereavement disorder category. Whereas the other family members in the book, this is my take on it, and it's, mm-hmm. it's not like I'm the expert on this, but I felt like the other family members were actually, even though they were so profoundly affected, and the kids, the teenage kids, were so guilty, felt so guilty, the other three family members were in a healthy grieving space. And the difference between the family members was really striking for me.
Yeah, it was. So they were, would you call their grief normal grief?
I would call it healthy, healthy grief. I have a personal, professional thing about using the word normal. I don't like using that word hardly ever.
I do like the word healthy, though. I'm going to remember that. Healthy grief, as opposed to, quote, what I said, which was normal grief. So does everybody have to kind of figure out how to grieve on their own? I mean, or be helped in the process?
That's a really, really, really good question. It's an interesting dance between feeling very alone and having a unique personal experience, whether it's the loss, the death of someone, or the loss of someone to dementia or disappearance. And feeling isolated and wanting support, but not wanting the support that somebody else gives. Unintentionally. It's a very delicate dynamic. A lot of people I've worked with say, oh, I wish they wouldn't say that, and I wish they wouldn't say that, and I can't stand it when they say that. What I need is for someone to really listen to me and not impose their beliefs or their theory onto me.
Yeah, I think I think it's not the time when somebody needs instruction or from just the average person of what they should do with their grief or how they should grieve.
And sadly, that happens a lot. There's a few quotes that I wrote down when I was reading Ron's book that I really loved. Right in the beginning of the book, when the grief is first exploding. This quote on page 24, when he describes what's happening, he says, "Grief poured into our house, blew in through the window screens like the cold front preceding a thunderstorm." I thought, whoa, That says it. That's like,
yeah.
I'm going to use that quote in my class, Ron. I just think that's so beautiful. And then I loved how JJ talked back to the so-called therapist, the grief counselor that they were sent to. The grief counselor, and I don't know a lot of really good ones anyway, so I'm sort of, I love this, what JJ said. So the grief counselor says, "It's really, really hard to lose a little brother." And JJ says, "He's not lost, he's dead. If he were lost, we'd be out looking for him."
Yeah.
And I love that she's really, JJ, the sister, is talking back and speaking up for herself in a really potent way. And then JJ says to the therapist, "Aren't you supposed to be listening to what we're saying?" JJ asked. "Isn't that part of your job?" I loved that. And so in the classes I teach for therapists, I really, you know, challenge the group, all of us, including me, to ask ourselves, what is our job? How can we best support somebody? And what do we have to watch out for? And then, as human beings, all of us asking that question, how can we best support each other? And what do we need to watch out for?
Yeah. When is it, or when do you think it's, or how do you know when it's time to see a professional?
I think the way I would answer that, Larry, is when you feel like it, when you feel a pull towards that, would be one part of the answer. And I think the other part of the answer is when somebody starts to feel like they're moving into hopelessness or alienation, or feeling always inconsolable or always having thoughts of not wanting to stay alive. And that's a very interesting one too, because there's a natural longing. It doesn't always happen, but it does happen quite often, where the person that's still alive is missing their deceased loved one so much that they want to be with them. They want them back, or they want to be, you know, communicating with them somehow. And that's really common. So to be able to discern what's the difference of that kind of longing and suicidality.
I'm thinking, you know, when you're in that kind of situation, I mean, how do you, or who is the best person to be talking about? What kind of professional, and how do you know they've got the right training?
That's a really, really important set of considerations. I always encourage people to come up with a set of questions and that they want to ask potential counselors or therapists or faith leaders, and to ask a handful of people the same questions. Ask them, perhaps like what you just said, what kind of training do you have? What are your, what's your perspective on this and this and this? What are your beliefs about grief and the stages of grief or the not stages of grief? There's a lot of discussion in the past few years about finding new paradigms to talk about grief that aren't those typical five stages of grief, and to ask the potential support person about that, and then trust your instinct about who would be a good fit.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you help a loved one with their, you know, what can we do? Somebody else is in grief, grieving, I should say. What can we do to help a loved one with their grief?
Listen, deeply listen. And that's a skill. It's a skill. Deep listening is very different than having a chat with someone,
mm-hmm.
or advising them. And I think to make a commitment to oneself to practice deep listening. There's a phrase in a whole domain that's called companioning, really being a companion to the other person in their grief journey, which is very different than being an expert.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so tempting to always to want to provide a solution. You want to help the person. So you think, well, if I provide a solution or an avenue a person can follow, but that's not what probably they want to hear.
Sometimes they might want something to hold on to, but not necessarily being told what to do. So it's the word delicate is popping in my mind again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very delicate role to be in with another.
Linda in Wanakee has a comment. Linda, have you got a quick comment?
Try to be quick. I had a very unusual situation because my brother tried unsuccessfully to commit suicide when he was 17. And then when he was 38, he died, and we were told it was from an aneurysm. And I didn't find out for another 30 years that he had actually committed suicide. But one of the things he said to me before he died of what I thought was an aneurysm was, "I'm not afraid of dying." And we kind of made a joke about it. He said it's sort of like being shot into outer, I don't know. It was, and of course, I didn't know he committed suicide. I thought he died of an aneurysm. And then I felt so, well, it, you can imagine, but then I remembered when I did finally find out that it was a suicide, then it was so clear to me that he was calling to say goodbye.
Hmm. Linda, a comment on that, Kate?
Yes, I think what's important in these kind of cases is for this, you know, the family that's alive to make sure that they don't get eaten up by guilt when they look back and say, oh, I should have known, I should have seen this, I should have done that. That's a very, I don't know if Linda experienced that or not, but that is a very common experience for family members after a suicide in the family. And there are many ways that people say goodbye when they're planning suicide, and it's a very personal journey for the person who dies and for the family. And that is one of the most challenging situations, I think, to grapple with. And I would say, to loop back around, when there's a suicide in a family, it's usually really, really, really helpful to get professional support.
Yeah. There is a hotline. The suicide hotline is 988 instead of 911. It's 988. And that could be a source of help for the person who is contemplating it. But and I'm not sure if it'd be a help for the person who thinks their relative or friend is going that direction.
Well, yes, I think it's important if somebody's worried about a family member or a friend to call 988, to call the police department, you know, to create an intervention if possible. And sometimes it's not possible. And it's, you know, there's very individual situations that really need deep care and deep attention.
Kate, I am sorry we don't have more time. This has gone so quickly. I wonder if you could come back and be with us again. We can talk about this because there are other callers online with other comments. So perhaps we can get you back and take this up more completely.
I would be happy to. I'd really love to. I think there's a lot of themes here about different kinds of grief.
Yes.
That's really important to understand and
deal with.
So, yes, I'd be very happy to do that.
Thank you, Kate. Kate Greenway, MS LPAC, a licensed professional counselor, in other words, a deep life coach. It was great to talk with her today, and we'll try to get her back and do this again. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it sometimes goes. Tomorrow, it's Friday tomorrow, and my goodness, that's Garden Talk, and we'll talk about an upcoming herb fair, among other things. Thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.